grace and faith were used on us, not by us.
The gospel of grace.
You are the thing that was in the mind of God.
The gospel of peace.
This plan was put together by God and Jesus before the creation of anything else.
That was Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, December 14, 2018. Broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we help you reclaim who you really are and help you remember what you didn't know you'd forgotten. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Coleman Ridge, Tenabama. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Coleman Ridge, Tenabama, where we say that a text without a context is a pretext or a subtext. But right now, from Oak Ridge, Tennessee, with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams.
It is indeed, Don.
Is that actually you? I mean, I'm seeing you on my screen, and I just, is that you?
Oh, my. Well, for all of those who are detractors, number one, that thought that all of their hopes and dreams and prayers, cursings, hexes.
I hope that Mike Williams just go to hell. I just hoping.
I have one thing to say. Na, 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 na. We're back. So for them, and then, of course, to all of those who have been absolutely patient and wishing us nothing but health and well-being and contentment and courage
money.
And strength,
and
which we really
don't forget the money.
They always want us to have lots of money, and but we have we've made the big switch. Oh my gosh! And here we are. It has been 1 month. Since the day that I drove here from West Palm Beach, the transition, I guess that's what we're going to be talking a lot about today, at least some, I would think. We are going to be talking about this transition, goodness, for just about all of us. First off, let me say thank you to everyone who has been so encouraging. I was fully prepared for massive change in my life, but if I had multiplied that by 100, we would be somewhere near what I was prepared for.
Somewhere near halfway, maybe.
Oh, my gosh. It has been, it's number one, it's been delightful. I love my sister. She is a wonderful human being.
Now, just to put that in place, your sister Gail, yes?
Yes.
Her husband passed away not that long ago, and she herself is suffering from
Alzheimer's, and a diagnosis that I think for many years, none of us even used the term. We called it short-term memory loss, and we called it a lot of things, but it's the word you never want to speak. I have to say, Don, that as I have encountered new people, people that I've known for years, and I have known some about, some I've not known a whole lot about, and then brand new people just in the gym, I finally got started. Just to show you that we've not just left you guys out, but I just went to the gym the first time 1 week ago, less than a week ago. And anybody that knows that if I miss my gym time, there's something happening. So, but even the folks that I mentioned to that asked me about why I moved here, and I just briefly tell them why. And I have not, Don, I've not met one person, and I'm not exaggerating. I've not met one person who, when I told them my reasons for moving here to care for my sister, they've all said, my mom, my dad, my uncle, My grandfather, my grandmother, you know, this is like a plague that is going on that I was unaware of. I know that I have even a couple of people in my life as friends and friendships. Well, there's more than a couple now that I'm starting to think about it. Gosh, there's several that are dealing with someone in their life or a very close friend who is now advanced into Alzheimer's and or dementia.
Well, in the old days, when we had what was called an extended family, that meant that grandma lived when her husband died, probably I'd sell the family home and she'd move in with us. And also our Down syndrome son would live with us. And in that day of the extended family, we had three generations often living in one house, and the third generation was learning from the first generation, and they were absorbing the pathos and the empathy that we naturally developed for those in our family who were, let's just say, less endowed than ourselves for whatever reason. And so we'd say, well, grandma was just in her second childhood, or she was, you know, sometimes she was lucid and sometimes she wasn't. That's just grandma. And grandma would live with us until she died. But in this day of the nuclear family, we tend to farm these people out to yeah. places, don't we? And I can imagine when people say, oh, my grandmother, my grandfather, my dad, my uncle, I'm going to imagine, and I'll say this out loud for all the GRs who I know are thinking it, there are not very many people who would do what you're doing. And I'll guarantee that all the people who say to you, person in our family, blah, 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 I'm pretty sure that they'd be also saying, geez, I wish we had been able to do something more humane.
Well, you know, it is, it's a very cruel, cruel disease. And my sister very well may get to a point to where that staying in her own home, regardless of how many of us are able to try to contribute to her well-being and her peace and her happiness, which that's one thing I'm really glad to report, is that she is at peace 95% of the time, and she is happy almost all the time.
Does she recognize you or go in and out of that?
She mostly recognizes me. I tell you, when I know everything is okay if she calls me Mikey. But this guy, Mike, and her little brother, which I, you know, hey, without a disease, you'd have to say there's been a drastic change in 40 years in my appearance. So,
well, I saw that picture. I'm not going to tell you what I said to Randy French the other day about that picture of you with Norval Hayes. I'm just not going to tell you. But there has been a change, yes?
There has been a change. And that's our major goal right now. She is glad I'm here regardless of who I am. I've already dealt with one friend who I was extremely close to, who went into last stage Alzheimer's, actually. And even though they totally forgot who I was, we were so close, it was really quite amazing. When I arrive at their home, they are just delighted, and they kiss me and they hug me, and then her daughter will ask her, you know, Mom, do you know who this is? And she'll say, no, I don't know who this is.
I gather you're saying she wasn't like that with everyone.
No, she was not.
So there was a vestige.
There's the inside connection, even though their mind is not connecting the physical person.
Amazing.
There's a heart connection that is still there.
Oh, wow.
So, boy, it's a cruel, cruel thing. I certainly not only appreciate the support, I also just want to, I feel the need to apologize to our gospel revolutionaries and everybody that's so on board with the gospel and our supporters. I was dealing with this sense of abandoning kind of like abandoning my kids to go take care of my sister. I mean, I know that sounds really weird, but, you know, as I've gotten older, I do have more of a grandpa thing going on here. And I like it. Let me say that.
And you have that grandpa thing happening on a couple of levels. Firstly, the natural level, yes, with Corbin and
my Audrey, grandson, yeah,
your daughter. But as Paul said, my children in the faith, mm-hmm, there are so many people out there who can trace their current stability in the gospel directly to you. Now, whether or not you were directly in the path of genealogy, or like me, I happened to just grab a tape. Well, I guess that was directly too. But there are so many people out there to whom you are a father in the faith. Now, for those of you who think I just am sucking up here, I really am not. I'm recognizing a reality, which I know you see too, and that is we might say without God we wouldn't be where we are, or without Jesus or the Holy Spirit. Fact of the matter is, without Mike Williams in my life, I'd have been probably still preaching a gospel of do this and don't do that, and if you don't do that, well, you'll go to hell. The whole thing of grace came to me through one man, and that was Mike Williams. So you are a father in the faith, and also subsequently a grandfather in the faith. You old thing, you.
Just, you like saying anything that makes me old. Since you are older than me, that's, I just have to make sure that people are reminded of that.
Yes, but I'm what you'd call an elder statesman. You're just a father in the faith.
I'm just an old man.
Suck it up.
You know, it really has just, it's been an amazing journey. And, but I can tell you what came to my mind and my heart that really was a comfort to me, and that's the story about the 99 and the one. You know, if there's one lost sheep, you know, do you keep the 99 or do you go after the one that is in trouble? And there's been several times when I've laid down at night, and to be really honest with you, so desperately missing the gospel, I didn't realize how fortunate I was to do this show and to do the Tuesday broadcast, and to have the phone calls and the long, long, unending conversations that could go on forever about the gospel. And some nights I've laid down and I've thought, you know, I am starving for the gospel. Now, while I have preached the CPR of the gospel, I knew what the gospel does, and it's consistent, persistent, repetitive involvement in one's life, but I never experienced the lack of it.
Well, can we move to that in a moment?
Yeah, we sure can.
Because okay. I'd like to, I think you've actually glossed over a lot of the last 4 weeks, but we'll probably get to that a little bit later. I want you to know, I want everyone to know, I was like a cat that was up a tree. When Mike moved, I moved at the same, within maybe 2 days, we both moved house. Mike had no idea what he was going into, and probably still is wending his way through. We'll let him tell you about that if that's the case. But as far as I'm concerned, see, I'm a caregiver. I care for my stroke-surviving wife. I care for her in ways that you care for a disabled partner. So we did the move. I met a fantastic young man called Tim who helped us move.
It's wonderful.
This guy is as rough as guts and a total diamond. And they're the kind of people I like. I remember a pastor once denigrated me, saying, "You always get attracted to the bottom rung of society." And I said, "I don't know why that is. I just know I do." But this guy is far from the bottom rung. He's highly intelligent, although he doesn't know it. And he helped me move, helped us move in. He's doing it for nothing. well, much of it for nothing. And in the 4 weeks that I've been in this new place, I have been lost. I found that my energy had dissipated a great deal. Now I'm where I can go walking every day, which I'll be doing. I found that I was not 28 years old anymore. Apparently 67 is more than just a number. So there was that.
Yeah.
There was that. But we've moved in and we're happy here. But I didn't have my friend Mikey. Mike, part of the problem for Mike has been internet. And Mike and I, every week for the last 7 years, odd, maybe six and a half or something, have met like this.
Mm-hmm.
We're used to this. We expect this.
And many times during the week also.
Yes, many times during the week. Have you ever seen those guppies in an aquarium? Little guppy fish, and their mouth is going bah, 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 as they're trying to suck in oxygen. I've been like that for 4 weeks, and I'm, you know, like the drama queen that I am. I made some phone calls and this and that and one of our precious gospel revolutionary people said to me, you know, Don, here's a thought. Have you thought of this? Why don't we just let Mike sort things out? And we'll get everything going when it happens. Well,
it only feels like you've been abandoned.
Are you sporting a mustache, mate? Have you got a mustache?
No more than I've always had since the day I met you.
You haven't always had a mustache.
I've always had a mustache and goatee.
I don't know. See, like I say, there's more to 67 than just a number. But anyway, I can't tell your family how great I feel reconnecting with Mike today after the internet's been fixed up and after some of the speed bumps have been ironed out. And we could do this, and we've often said this, we could do this without you and have a perfectly great time.
Yeah.
The fact that you're there means a lot to us, and we're going to be making sure that everyone gets to know that we are back on air, and it's time for me to shut up and let Mike tell you what he was going to tell you, I suppose.
Don, to follow up on what I was saying was that I stop and think, you know, if you and I have found greater value in the gospel than what we, you know, we all appreciate the gospel, and nobody out there has had to do without the gospel because of us. Believe me, that's not a prerequisite for being able to experience the gospel. But people's usual way of experiencing the gospel, who have done that through the PowerCast and the Tuesday night Bible study and or whatever other means that we offer. Thank goodness we've got the website and you can go there and pretend you can even pretend we are here just by listening to many, many, many hundreds of thousands of shows and CDs and downloads of all kinds. I think that one of the things that's coming out of this after a full month, in fact, just a little over a month of time, if everybody is affected by this as much as Don and I have been, and I include others in that I know of also that I've spoken with, boy, You guys are really appreciating the gospel right now, and you're probably wishing we'd shut up and do a Bible study or something, but we wanted to just reconnect with you on this particular show. We have no clue what we're going to get into, but I was thinking about this dramatic, wonderful conclusion that we came to. I mean, it was almost like a swan song. I began to look back at it and wonder, was that study in Galatians the last we will ever do?
Yeah.
You know, you begin to think a little apocalyptically, you know. And,
Well, you also begin to think within your own bubble. And within that bubble, we have that ever-speaking, never-absent voice that talks to us all the time. Now, I don't care who you are, it's just there.
Yeah.
And people say various things about it. But the fact of the matter is, as we listen to that voice, and I'm going to say that there are two voices in us. One is the God with whom we have become one. And the other is this voice which seems to almost plague every human being. You're not good enough. Oh, could that be true? Is this idea da-da-da-da-da? And all I do is when I hear that voice, I don't know whether it's good or bad. I just know it's there.
Yeah.
And I know it doesn't generally help me. But if I can follow my heart, somewhere underneath that is another carrier wave. Thank Christ. And it's saying, you're going to do some things before you die, son. Mm-hmm. You're going to achieve. And these are two different voices. I don't know how to even quantify all of that, Mike. I just know that when we're in our own bubble without the gospel coming in, and I've been luckier than you in as much as I've had people I can call up, and there are times you can't make phone calls where you are.
No, can't even pick up the phone, you know, yeah, to hear from somebody.
Gospel Revolution.
Mike, without the CPR of the gospel, I don't know where I'd have been these last 4 weeks, because now I'm writing a new book, and I'm studying four books on James at the moment. Can you believe that there's more books on James out there than I ever figured? But and one of them I was put onto by our dear friend Victor Brennan. Thank you, Vic. And there is going to be an upcoming book on the two views of the good news. I've stolen your title. We might have to talk about that via lawyers.
Royalties.
Yeah. But in my case, over the last 4 weeks, I've had people to call. To be honest, mate, I have not been nearly as dislocated from the gospel as you have been there. Now, some of our listeners are going to say, well, you know, God's in you and the Holy Spirit's the great teacher and you keep saying this sort of stuff. And fact of the matter is, family, I need to have what's called spaced repetition happening in my life. And it is simply the process by which we assimilate and absorb and actually become one with the knowledge that we factor into ourselves. There's an old saying, and I've said it before on this show. I've got this phlegm down here. First time you hear something new, you say, oh, what a load of crap. And the second time you hear it, you say, ah, jeez, that again. And the third time you hear it, you say, you know, all right, so he makes a point here and a point there. And the fourth time, until the sixth time you hear it, you say, well, I always believed that. I never thought anything different.
Yeah.
Now, that's what spaced repetition does. Spaced repetition is another name for consistent, persistent, repetitive, the CPR of the gospel. And I don't care who you are, we've had a lot of people come in and go through the gospel revolution. Some of them, in fact, I don't know one of them who has not said to me, well, I just stopped listening, you know, because I learned that and it was good enough. But if you want the foundation of your freedom to remain as pertinent as it was the day you first heard that bell that you can't unring, if you want your mind to be continuously refreshed with truth, may I recommend nothing better than the CPR of the gospel. And that means just keep – like Mike said earlier, you can go to the website, thank God, and you can just – you can rape, pillage and go all the way through hours worth of wonderful input. There's articles. There's God knows how much in videos. I mean, Jeff did videos for years, 500 or 600 videos, and then Mike's done his own videos, and Randy's done videos, and Java Joe's done video. There is no shortage of the gospel for you to CPR yourself out of your noggin on.
You know, Don, one of the things that really I started thinking about since this time of this last going on 5 weeks now, especially by the time of this show being aired, I've thought about those folks, the people who are facing life now, who have stopped being active participants in the gospel. I'm not talking about giving and supporting the gospel, but active participants in listening to the gospel, on feeding on the gospel, because they somehow felt that they had achieved the freedom they wanted. And they have made these moves, which we have made no contradiction to whatsoever, or given them opposition. And many of them we still occasionally talk to. People are still friends throughout the network.
Yeah.
We don't divide with people because of even if they disagree with us, we don't divide with people because of those things.
And surprisingly, and generally speaking, they don't divide with us.
No, well, they have a welcoming heart here, and they know that. But I got to thinking about the challenges of this, and as much gospel as I was chalking in every week up until the move happened, and I know I was going on reserves for a long time, and I started thinking about, what about these people who have virtually cut themselves off from this participation? This was an imposed exile for me. To a lesser degree, as you've described, a little lesser degree to you, but nonetheless, the very same consequence of not having that revitalization going on all the time. It's just really quite amazing. And I'm telling you, my heart really did ache for those who have, as they say, we're moving on. I don't even know what that means, to and from what. I don't know why. I still don't understand that. But that's not for me to put into question. That's their decisions. I think about those folks out there. And, you know, if life's going smoothly, as it just always does, you know.
Yeah, really.
I mean, maybe you won't miss the gospel that much. Man, I'm telling you what, when life really does start happening and you do not have a consistent, persistent, and repetitive influence of the gospel, you are going to feel it. And here is the sad part. You will not know what it is that you need until you actually get an infusion of the gospel. And suddenly, should you ever come to that, suddenly you're going to say, oh my God, how much I needed that. My world is so, my gosh, my whole perspective is different now. I can see things differently and clearly, and I can handle things better than I did before. But I do know that in the middle of this, once somebody has kind of distanced themselves from this CPR of the gospel, when you start getting weighed down, when your back starts to bend over, when you are your head starts to tilt down, when your view is no longer on the horizon, it's on the ground, you're not going to stop and say, boy, you know, I'm just desperate for the gospel. Now, I was able to do that because of the abrupt change there was in my life. I knew what I was lacking.
This wasn't a gentle slide. This was an overnight
catastrophic push over a cliff. And not into a free fall either. It was like there was a pile of rocks waiting there for me. But folks, I tell you, if we accomplish nothing on this particular show except to give you a nudge to stop and acknowledge the urgency. If you've missed this show, if you've missed the Tuesday night, if you feel the difference, acknowledge that and acknowledge your own personal need to hear this and to be involved in it, to speak it, to share it, all for selfish reasons. I tell you what, I've been sharing the gospel for quite a few decades now, and I have to tell you, it has been all for selfish reasons. It just so happens it changes people's lives. My need for the gospel is paramount. It is nothing short of the most valuable thing that I have in my life.
Well, we might just back that up with words from our dear friend Richard John Mull. And here's what Mr. Mull had to say. Now, Mull was the reason that I completely caved into the gospel. Mike was the one who rang the bell I couldn't unhear. But Richard John Mull, one day in my living room in Nashville, I called him, and there was something about his level of conviction, about his, I don't know what it was, but I said, oh, okay, yeah, I'm in.
Yeah.
And here he is again from the grave, our dear and greatly missed friend, Richard John Mull. Here he is.
I keep getting saved over and over again here, and it's been glorious. I'm excited to be a part of all this. Whenever I go to the doctor, there's always something new that they find when they look, and I tell them to stop looking, because every time they look, they find something new. And I've got good blood pressure, and my heart's beating constantly at a normal pace. My pulse is normal. My brain is subnormal, but we're working on that. At least, the Lord is. And he's helping me get it renewed.
What do you mean by that?
Well, he's feeding me the truth of the gospel. It's in my heart already, and it's being fed from my heart to my brain. Every time I hear it, I'm getting saved in my thoughts, feelings, and my emotions. My mind is being transformed, being renewed by that gospel, by the truth of the gospel. Because there's other gospels out there that aren't the gospel at all, according to Paul. And the truth of the gospel will give you the liberty, the freedom that Christ has set us free. To enjoy that 100% each and every day. And whatever comes along doesn't bother me, because I know that reality is found in Christ. All this other stuff is just temporary. I'll be out of this life and into the new life after physical death, not the new life that I've been given in Christ, because I'm living that now, and I love it. It's so good for me, you know. It just does everything. It lifts me up. It gives me strength. It encourages me. I'll call people up and talk about the gospel to encourage them, and they end up encouraging me. It's a wonder, this freedom, this liberty we have to just do what we want to do that's in our heart. And I love that. You know, it doesn't get any better than Galatians chapter 5, verse 1, where Paul says, "Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage." Well, the word liberty used here in this particular verse 1 of Galatians chapter 5 is from the Greek for politia, which means the community or the commonwealth, the combined group, everybody. It's a complete liberty. It's not just for one person or two people or 10 people. It's for everybody. And yet the clergy in this nation and around the world has tried to hide this liberty and say it's a mystery, and it'll be revealed one day along with the gospel and all these other things that are in the Bible. Well, I'm telling you right now, it's already been revealed. It's in everybody's heart. They need to hear the gospel, the truth of the gospel, so that liberty can establish itself in their life and get into their mind and allow them to just live freely. Verse 13, chapter 5, Galatians. "For brethren, you have been called unto liberty. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another." How can we serve one another if we don't know we have that liberty? And the word liberty here in verse 13 is the word freedom, which is eleutheria in the Greek, eleutheria. It means freedom, complete and total freedom. There's nothing missing there. But also in verse 1 of Galatians chapter 5, one of the times liberty is used there means to be free, made free from mortal liability. And until we know we're free from liability, how can we take responsibility? And I'm taking responsibility for my own life. I'm taking responsibility for His righteousness, and I'm accepting it as my own. And that's what gives me such joy. I don't have to do anything to be right with God. I just be me. Boy wonder over here. Chemo boy. Dough boy. Doctor do nothing. I'm having so much fun. I'm telling you.
All right. Hold on for a second. First of all, getting back into the passage in Galatians there, when he mentions it, don't allow it to be an excuse for the flesh. I'm paraphrasing. Mm-hmm. What does he mean by that, do you think?
He means don't think that what you do in the flesh is going to make you right with God. There's no righteousness coming out of the flesh. So we just need to understand that if we accept His righteousness, it's in you already. It's been given as a gift. Just let it wash over you. You don't even have to unwrap it. It's
right.
There.
Right. But, Michael, I thought the flesh was sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yes, and the reason we thought that's because that's what we were told.
Gospel Revolution.
Now, we left you some 5 weeks ago having completed the book of Galatians.
Yes.
And we teased you on the fact that we were possibly going to do the same with the book of Hebrews.
Hey, I got an idea.
What, yeah?
Let's go through the whole book of Hebrews today.
Dang!
Just to make up for this.
Greek,
this,
Latin, and English?
Let's do it all. Several versions. Let's cover every bit of it.
That's it. You've been missing the CPR of the gospel family. You need a heavy hit right now.
Don, no, really. I really do want to cover the entire book of Hebrews today with you. And we had not planned to do this at all. In fact, after we started talking, this kind of came up. And
well, you got 30 minutes, mate. Go for it.
It won't even take that long, I don't think. But we do want you to know what's in the book of Hebrews. I think most of you know. But this overview is going to be very good as we begin to go into this. Now, first off, the primary subject in the book of Hebrews is perfection. That is its primary understanding, regardless of Paul's comparative teachings. It is to lead you to an understanding of perfection. Which Christianity has screwed up royally. So what we're going to learn in the book of Hebrews is about perfection, and we're going to learn it by dialectic teaching, by comparative teaching. And let's just take some views through here. In Hebrews chapter 1 is where Paul begins to compare Jesus to the angels. And he points out the lack of perfection in the angelic realm, and then how that because of the imperfection in the angelic realm, that was passed on to the human race. So we've got this coverage of a comparison between Jesus and the angels, and that goes all the way through chapter 2. And then he begins to compare in chapter 3, he begins to compare Jesus or Christ to Moses. And we begin to learn that this perfection is brought about by a high priest. That is the entire thing that's going on here. So then we begin in chapter 3 of covering the difference between Christ and Moses. It's vitally important to understand the difference between Christ and Moses. And then you get into chapter 4, and we begin to cover
the cost of admittance.
We begin to, he gave some comparison to David, which is very powerful comparison. He then also goes into comparing Christ as the great high priest to Melchizedek. One of the things that we learn in chapter 6, which this is one of those things that I know of no one on the planet that ever taught on this before I did. I still can't find a reference to somebody teaching this in the context that is talked about by the writer of Hebrews, and that is in chapter 6, the what is called the foundational doctrines. When I started studying this, and this has been probably 30 years ago, I began to realize that these foundational doctrines found in chapter 6 are not foundational doctrines to be taught on. They are foundational doctrines of the old covenant to be left behind. And what a shock. And that's, I can tell you at this point is when my mind began to try to embrace all of these things that were to be left behind. And I want to point out to you that the very last one that is to be left behind is eternal judgment. There should be no teaching on eternal judgment after the cross. No teaching. There should be no teaching on how to have faith toward God. There should be no teaching on repentance from dead works. There should be no teaching on transferring of sins through the laying on of hands. There should be no more teaching about resurrection from the dead. Oh my gosh. Well, we just upended all of Christianity, so you guys are going to have to stay in tune for this one. This is some powerful, powerful things. Don, of those six chapters that we've glanced at, is there anything in those that stand out to you in particular?
Well, I hate it when you make me get my Bible out. You can see my Bible.
It's just like mine.
It's my favorite version, the large print version. Mate, I remember sitting in a very plain little church, one that I was raised in. And this old brother got up and talked about the better sacrifice, about the better priest, about the better. And in that one lesson, I might have learned a lesson on Hebrews that has stayed with me for life, and that is that the writer of Hebrews was writing to Hebrews. Imagine that.
Yep.
and so he was somebody who was pretty proficient in the matter of Hebraic law or Jewish custom or culture and so forth. And for him to say there was a better sacrifice, there was a more perfect high priest, there was a more perfect this, there was a more perfect that. It was like he was saying, hey, you had it good, now you got it great. And I think that is what Hebrews most impresses me with. Of all of those first six chapters, and interestingly, chapter 6 is almost smack in the middle of the book, which is where the writer of the Epistle to the Hebrews chooses to put these things. This is the end of doctrines of this, that, and the other in verses 1 and 2.
Yeah. I love it.
And you can... You can cut and slice that any way you like. I have never written that in anything to anybody that ever had anything to say, but that can't possibly be right, and it's certainly not right the way you think it's right. Well, the writer of the Epistle to the Hebrews thought it was right.
And they are all the things that would declare that all Christian doctrine is a farce.
The whole lot. Is there anything he leaves out? Go through that list again, would you mind?
There isn't.
Just go through. Now, family, have a listen to this list.
Therefore, leaving the principles of the doctrines, or that word principles just means the rules, has other connotation to it. Let's leave the rules of the doctrine of Christ. This is where people don't get it, Don. What Christ taught and what Christ did are two different things. Let us go on into perfection. Why? Because there was no perfection to be gained in the teachings of Christ. There was requirements for perfection, but there was no perfection to be gained by adhering to the teaching.
If there had been perfection to be gained, somebody, surely somebody would have discovered it in the 1500 years prior to Christ.
Indeed, or even after his birth. Yeah. I mean, if perfection were to be gained by the teaching, why did he have to die?
Why indeed?
Why did that have to happen? Let us go on to perfection, not laying again. That literally means don't do this anymore. Don't teach this anymore. Don't teach about repentance from dead works. Repentance is the place that you go to start all over again.
Now, when I was in church, we used a hammer. We used to hammer Romans 12, verse 1 and 2. Don't be conformed to the world, be transformed. And we were taught that that was renewing our minds from dead works.
That's what we were taught. But this, the dead works that the writer of Hebrews is talking about is all of the things that were connected to the attempts for perfection through laws and sacrifices and ceremonies and feast days.
And never forget, it's Hebrews this man is writing to. He's writing to those, mm-hmm. that 6% of the ancient world to whom God said, you want to see how it really works? Here, try this on for size. And nobody, or as Isaiah said, there is none, there ain't nobody righteous, no, not one.
Mm-hmm. And then you go on to, and of faith toward God. Stop talking about it. Stop teaching it.
But without faith, you cannot please God.
And oddly enough, you find chapter 12, as they will go into, Jesus is the author and finisher of faith.
Not of our faith. That word our isn't in there.
Not even of our faith. Dang. If it was our faith, it'd be great. But he's not. He authored and finished faith.
And the life I live, I now live by the faith of Christ.
By the faith of. Oh. So stop talking about faith toward. It is so, you say, but Mike, faith toward God, that sounds like something very important. Well, so were sacrifice, animal sacrifices. Mm-hmm. They were important. So is the law, Moses and the tabernacle. It was very, very important. And so was faith toward God.
Had to be important because Jesus said, not one jot nor tittle of the law will pass away until heaven and earth pass away. But that's for another conversation.
We are not undermining the importance of faith toward God. We are acknowledging that Christ is the author and finisher of faith. How do you go back and start teaching people about faith when Christ was the one who authored it, and he's the one who finished it? Faith is all about Jesus. It's not about you, dude.
Keep hitting up this list. You're getting me all now, and I don't know what to say.
Of the doctrine of baptisms, and this is not the doctrine of submersion in water that the baptism or the sprinkling. This is the doctrine of washings. This is a very specific reference to the washings that the high priest would have to go through to be able to get into the Holy of Holies without dying.
Not just that, but there was something called the brass laver in the outer court. Now, you had the outer court, the inner court, and the Holy of Holies. There were three distinct parts to that whole shebang. And there was something called the brass laver. Brass in Scripture always speaks of judgment, always. There was the brass, remember the brass pole upon which the serpent was that you looked at and lived? Because judgment was taking place. Judgment, and as you dipped your face in that laver, you had to bend down to get into it, and you could see your own reflection, and you were judging yourself. You were at least saying to yourself, well, I screwed up this year. what'll I do next year, sort of thing. And as the priest in his washings and you in your washings took part in, and that, and Mike is spot on. That's what the Greek word means. It doesn't mean dipping. It doesn't mean going for a swim. It doesn't mean immersion. It means washings.
Indeed, and very specific, especially to the Hebrews, they knew exactly what he was talking about here. This does not have, okay, and I remember in the Baptist church, I remember one pastor telling me and him saying and declaring publicly that he teaches on all of these once a year at the first of the year so that they'll get the foundation right so that everything else that he teaches will be built on the foundation.
And what did verse 1 say? Read that again.
Verse 1 says, not laying again the foundation.
Oh, God almighty. Oh, my gosh. Oh, Mikey, you're getting me hot, mate. I hope.
Of the doctrines of baptism and the laying on of hands. Now, this isn't talking about some Pentecostal church deal. This is, again, specifically referring to the laying on of hands for the transference of sin into the scapegoat.
Yes.
And it's not referring to anything else.
Well, it's talking about the day of Yom Kippur,
yep.
As it's called now. It was the day of forgiveness. It was that one day in around about October in the Jewish calendar when the whole of the Jewish race went out and looked on to see whether their priest would get killed because he had sin in his life. No, he didn't. He's coming out. Oh, he's coming out. And what's going to happen next is there's going to be two goats brought up. And one of the goats, we're going to lay hands on that and put the sin of the whole people. The whole people. Oh, hang on. Not just the whole people. The whole people for a whole year.
Yeah.
Oh, glory.
So no needing to teach on that. Do you see there's very logical conclusions for why you don't need this teaching anymore.
Now, it doesn't matter whether you're Pentecostal or Baptist. The laying on of hands is important to all of those people. If I set you apart as a pastor, I lay hands on you. That's the way it's done.
Yeah.
Oh, golly.
Well, this is tantamount, I really do believe, in trying to instruct someone who's about to build a skyscraper how to put notches in logs to build a cabin. Was putting notches in the end of logs to lock them together, was that a life-saving construction, protection of life, security? Was it everything at one time? Yes. But do you see how stupid it would be to teach the people, to get the whole crew together that's about to build a brick house or, hey, let's go with the biggie, our new World Trade Center, downtown New York. It would be like trying to get those guys all together. Okay, stop the machines. You know, now we need to learn something here. All right, here's a log. Here's how you notch these. And if you notch them just right, they will lock together and you'll have a strong building. Now, would that be foolish? That would be foolish to the point of idiocy. That's just how foolish it is to try to tell somebody about the laying on of hands and baptism and faith toward God now. It's just, that served its purpose. It's done. Don't try to tell somebody who's ready to build a skyscraper how to notch logs, please. And number one, if they think that if somebody getting ready to build a skyscraper thinks what you're saying about notching logs is important, you do not want him building your skyscraper.
And another thing you want, you don't want him building the next NASA Mars explorative rocket either. I mean, if his name's Wilbur Wright, wonderful for Wilbur. Dear old Wilbur's mother must have been as proud as proud as, I mean, but to go to the moon? I don't think so.
And guess what else you don't have to teach on anymore?
Oh, come on, mate. There's not more, surely.
the resurrection of the dead.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my goodness, Mike. Now, here's where you've just gone off the road. I'm going to make sure my body is placed in the ground where Jesus can find
it. My grandmother suffered that fate. My dad wanted her cremated. My mum, who was a staunch Bretho. Now, my dad, who was a Baptist, had no worries with her being, and in fact, the whole rest of the family had no worries with her being cremated. But mum, she needed her husband's mother put in the ground where the body could be resurrected.
Not only where it could be resurrected, but do you know that the way here in the U.S., if it is a church cemetery, you'll be hard-pressed to find one where the tombstone is not facing the east.
Get out of here.
No.
Oh, get out of here. You're talking about the Eastern Gate and when I wake up.
They're talking about Christ coming as lightning from the east to the west. That his coming will be from the east. So see, the methodology about burying people facing the east is, God forbid, how horrible would it be for you to raise from the dead with your back to Jesus?
Oh, my. Oh, I can see it.
Tragedy.
I can see it now. Yeah.
He'd probably say, to hell with you.
Yeah.
You stand up not facing me.
You're just the same as the people buried in the Catholic part of the cemetery. You are.
Folks, I've got a lot of pent up in me over the last five. So.
Oh, yeah. Family. If you thought you heard preaching, you ain't heard nothing yet. This boy's going to let it all out in the Hebrews.
I'm telling you, this has been a lot of these things, even in my expulsion from the communication of the gospel, it still all runs through my head.
Now, can I take us back to verse 1, Mike?
You can go back to
therefore
verse 1.
Therefore, leaving the principles of the doctrine of Christ.
Yep.
Let us go on. Unto perfection. So that tells us that the principles of the doctrine of Christ aren't perfect, number one. Number two, it tells us that there is somewhere to go on from the doctrines of the principles of Christ. And then it says, let us go on unto perfection. So there is something imperfect about the principles of the doctrine of Christ. What was the doctrine of Christ? Well, he says it. All of these things that we're to leave behind were the doctrine of Christ. Well, hold on. I never heard Christ talking about a few of these things in his life on earth. Hang on. How are these the doctrine of Christ? Apparently, before Christ ever appeared, there was a doctrine of Christ and there were principles of the doctrine of Christ which we're to leave behind and go on to perfection.
Yeah.
What was the principles of the doctrine of Christ? The word principles is arche, which simply is that capstone in a bridge, which is at the very top of the arch under the bridge and holds the whole bridge together. And it simply means the first principles.
Right.
It's a little bit like the Greek word stoichon, but it's the first principles. So there were some first principles of Christ, or at least of the doctrine of Christ. What was the doctrine of Christ? Well, it was everything, as I see it, Mike, that was in the Old Testament. It was everything that was in the Scriptures. It was all those types and shadows and things. I mean, if you just have a look at the priest's garment, it was blue and white, blue speaking of the heavens, white speaking of purity. At the bottom was a bell and a pomegranate, a bell and a pomegranate, a bell and a pomegranate, speaking of joy and fruit and joy and fruit and joy and fruit. And there are all these wonderful pictures. If you have a look at the Temple of Solomon, I mean, the very timbers out of which it was constructed were pictures of Jesus. If you have a look at all of those feasts, they were pictures of Jesus. If you have a look at the offerings and sacrifices, the fine meal offerings, speaking of the purity of these were all about Jesus. So these were, in my opinion, the principles of the doctrine of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
They were only ever a shadow. They weren't the real Christ. So let us go on.
Please.
No, that's it, buddy. I'm all. I had to get you off. Yeah,
Hey, I've done what I do best. I got your motor running. Mm-hmm. Get out on the highway. So here we go. You see who is the long-winded one around here now, folks? It's I was going to do this in 30 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. the first time you ever do anything in 30 minutes will be the first time that I'll lay myself down as a red rug in front of your feet.
And of the resurrection of the dead. Why would you not teach on the resurrection of the dead? Christianity, please hear this truth. Everything that has to do with resurrection from the dead took place for at the resurrection of Christ, but it wasn't just he who raised from the dead. It was all of creation that rose from the dead. Wow. So why are you talking?
Let us go into perfection. If that ain't perfection, I don't know what is.
Perfection is that everybody's been raised from the dead. Goodness gracious, folks.
Golly.
You think that stinking body of yours is going to come out of the grave? Well, you can forget it. Just like all of the people who've died for 2,000 years has had to forget it. It ain't going to happen.
You couldn't save your stinking body. You went on to life support, Christians, who thought that heaven was much better than this world. You went on to life support. How come? If heaven was so much better, you couldn't save your own body. Why would God want to save it? Think about that. Why would God want to save what you couldn't save?
Exactly. And of eternal judgment.
No.
Need to stop talking about.
Yeah, you're spitting on the Bible. Yeah, you just, I mean, now you just, you're setting to meddling.
Oh, man. So we'll go through these things in detail. I promise you. Now, I'm having to use my bridle and bit to hold Don back because I can tell I'm wondering who this 5 weeks has had more of a consequence on myself or him.
And so. I just caught myself rocking backwards and forwards like somebody in an asylum.
And I saw that too. So then we'll go on out of chapter 6. And then we go through the fact that the covenant could only have been established by two, and the two was God and Christ, that he by two unmovable forces. Then they compare him to Melchizedek. Very powerful comparison there. Going on into the high priesthood of Jesus, it is just Paul goes into such depth from this point. And he goes into the first and the last covenant, why this one was faulty. One was faulty. It wasn't perfect. This one's perfect. This one's perfect. You're perfect. The priesthood, who is Christ, is perfect. Therefore, those represented by the priesthood, they are perfect also. Duh. I don't know why that's so difficult. And then chapter 9 is where we find out that all of this stuff that we've talked about through these first 8 chapters is called worldly. It's worldly. Now, everything you were told was worldly wasn't worldly at all. That's worldly. Now, have you been told about being carnal? Well, the writer of Hebrews tells us what's carnal. All of those rules and laws, those ordinances, even the teachings of Christ that we're supposed to leave behind. So you don't have to worry about being carnal. You're carnal if you go back under the law, folks, not if you break the law.
Say that again. That just slipped by.
You are carnal not because you break the law, but because you go back under the law.
Be quiet just for a minute. I want that to sink into me because I'm slow. I'm a little bear of a little brain. Say it again, would you, mate?
Well, let me say this one. See how you like this one. You're not worldly because you don't go to church. You're worldly because you do go to church.
I'm choking. I'm choking. Just keep going.
And then, of course, we plunge headlong into chapter 10. Oh, my gosh. And what a revelation of how sin has been dealt with once and for all. You don't confess sins. Mm. If you do, you're insulting Christ. Mm. So let's stop insulting Christ. Sin has been remitted. It is gone. Then chapter 11, the Hall of Fame of Faith, which not one place does it say it was these people's faith. In fact, the entire chapter says, through faith, we understand that the worlds were framed together by the word of God. Well, now, who was around at that time exercising their faith?
Could you read verse 7 for me?
Verse 7, by Noah.
Nope.
I'm sorry. By faith, Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear.
Moved with faith.
Prepared an ark.
I know my Bible. It says moved with faith.
And there is no fear in faith, right?
Golly.
If you're in fear, you're not in faith. Guess where Noah was? He was in fear. Guess where Noah was not? He was not in faith. So guess whose faith it was? It was God's faith. The very same faith that framed people. Get it. Come on. It's been a 5-week hiatus here. Give me a break.
Well, can you read verse 40?
Well, I like verse 31. By faith, the harlot Rahab perished not. So what is a good act of faith? Being a harlot is a good act of faith, if it's talking about her faith.
The great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandma of Jesus.
Yes, exactly. The harlot.
Damn.
And verse 40, God having provided something better for us, that they, without us, should not be made. La-da-da-da. Perfect.
Tell you, I love this verse, mate. I so love this verse because it tells me that all those people that I was taught about in Sunday school, they were not that hot because they couldn't make it without you and without me.
Yeah.
They could not make it without Richard John Mull. They could not make it without Brad over in Arizona. They couldn't make it without Pat Rouse-Sellen. They could not make it without Danny Rouse. They couldn't make it without any of these bloody people, because without them, they couldn't be made perfect or complete.
Yep.
What does that say to you? Now, that word there in the Greek is telio, or telios. It comes from the root telios, which means complete. It doesn't mean perfect, as in everything's perfectly aligned. It means complete. What do you take from that?
Well, it tells me that if everyone is not perfect, no one is perfect. If you have to have somebody else to become perfect so that somebody else can be perfect, that means either everybody's perfect or nobody's perfect.
Hang on. So if everybody's perfect and no one is perfect, so you need somebody else to be perfected to perfection, and without those perfectors, there's no perfect. What the hell did you just say?
Chapter 12, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of faith. And this is how this magnificent book begins to wrap all of this incredible stuff. It tells us how that we were buried with Christ, we're risen with Christ, stop being stupid. Let me tell you something, folks. We're going to have a good time going through the book of Hebrews. It's been so long, I can't even. I was going through Galatians and Hebrews. I can't even say the names anymore. So,
well, yeah, it does say, "For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth." Has he been chastening you, mate?
The chastening of the Lord. That is going to be a powerful, powerful chapter to go through. If I were to tell you that he was chastening me, I would be insulting the grace of God according to the same chapter. So that's the preview of Hebrews.
Hebrews.
Oh, yeah, Hebrews. Let me tell you something. It's going to be a Hebrew for a lot of Christians to go through this. And folks, just what you've learned, I mean, we just skimmed the surface of this book. Can you imagine what we're going to mine out of this?
Mm.
Can you imagine the show where we go into each one of those doctrines that should be left behind? Can you imagine that we'll have all of the five chapters to back up those reasons for leaving those doctrines behind? We'll have that all packed away. And then from there on, it will explain why, on the other side of putting those doctrines away, just how perfect things have become.
So listen to this verse. Listen to this verse in Hebrews 13:17. It says, "Obey them which have the rule over you and submit yourselves." So you need to send your money to us. You need to listen. You need to listen to these podcasts and submit. They watch for your souls. Oh, we watch for your souls, brothers. This is going to be good. Family, this is going to be so good. This is only a short. I mean, we've been recording for an hour 33, and there's a bunch of this that's going to get cut out. Not because I'm cutting anything that Mike said out, but I'm cutting out a couple of phone calls and a bit of this and a bit of that. I want you to know that we love you. We love doing what we do. We do what we do, with or without you. And although we've had some speed bumps, and although we've had some dislocations over the last 5 weeks, we're back.
Gospel Revolution.
Mike, I'm a bit breathless. I am a little bit, I feel like I've just gone for a very long walk at a very high speed, and you've taken me there. I hope you're proud of yourself, young fella. But before we go, family, it is so good to be back with you.
Oh, my God, yes.
Would you do us a service of emailing your friends, letting them know we're back online, and keep making comments? As we put these podcasts up on the website, there is a space where you can make comments and tell us we're a bunch of actually is what you can tell us. You can tell us anything you like about ourselves, but not that we'll listen, but we don't. We had somebody not so long back, and they said, you'll probably delete this. No, we won't delete anything. We love that you speak your mind. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we won't answer, but we're not going to delete you. Let your friends know we're back online. The fun stuff is happening again. And, Mike, any last words?
Yeah, just thank you guys so much. You've just been, my goodness, the terms of endearment I could use would be endless, but you know that, and I love you so much, and I feel loved. You guys really helped me to feel the love that I needed in this transition. Thank you. We do want you to know that in 2 weeks we will be starting the winter chilled cold. This one will be a true winter pledge drive because I'll be in winter instead of down in West Palm. So what we will be doing, I'm going to be doing the pledge drive. Now, you already know the situation that I'm in. So what I'm asking is that as many of you as possibly can give me a call. And if I'm not able to answer the phone, please leave a message. I do have morning hours and nighttime hours after my sister goes to sleep that I'm able to get some things done. But if I call you and leave a message, we're just asking that you return the call, even if it's to say, you know, Michael, not this time, but you know, call again on the next pledge drive or just stop calling altogether. It will save me time if you tell me just to buzz off. right now time is of the essence. But if you can help us out, I do want you to know that the gospel revolution right now is stable financially. We are very grateful for that. I was offered a sum of money to come here and care for my sister. I did turn that down, but I was told that if I did not take it, that I would not be able to come and do the job. And I said, how about a contribution to Mike Williams Ministries? So right now, I suddenly became a pretty good contributor. I'm one of the top five contributors to the Gospel Revolution financially right now, Don. So
that is something.
And also, just as a backup, because we've gone through a lot and probably will still continue to face some bumps in the road. If someone else calls in my stead, we will try to let you know who that's going to be. But if we can't, you will know who they are. They will have been somebody that's been in contact with you before. We're not going to throw somebody at you that you don't know whatsoever. So,
and so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. If you'd like to know anything about the Gospel Revolution, then call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. So now it's good night from myself, Don Bartlett, from the GR Studios right here in Coleman Ridge, Tenabama.
And it is good night from Michael Williams here in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Thank you guys so very much. I am doing my best to at least continue my learned enunciation. Being around fellow former tribesmen, believe me, it is. I'm hanging on for dear life. I'm hanging on for dear life here. You got it. So if I do some slips and I just, you know, something happens, you guys know that I'm just reverting back to what I used to be. It's like unborn again. So I know most people can't understand that. So I do the best that I can to enunciate as I learned to do. Love you guys so much.
We sure hope that you enjoyed today's podcast. And remember, we'll be here to do the same thing all over again next week. And here to take us out is Mikey's first band and his only ever band, the Oak Ridge Boys.
Don't you play some country.
With Elvira.
Do not play some country. I forbid it.
Good luck with that.
We're done?
We're done.
All right. That was fun. Thank you. I needed it.
We both did, and it was fun. Thank you, friend. Thank you for letting me talk over you and talk you down and all that sort of thing. Appreciate it.
It's our norm.
It is.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Michael. Love you, too.
If they saw him riding in, long hair flying in the wind, would they love him down in Shreveport today?
If they heard he was a Jew and a Palestinian too,
would they love him down in Nashville today?
If they saw him talk with ease to the junkies, whores, and thieves,
would they love him out in Wichita today?
And would the rich man think it funny if he said, give up your money?
Would they love him up on Wall Street today? Wine from water, gave it to their sons and daughters. What would the folks in Salt Lake City say
if he talked of brotherhood as he walked their neighborhoods? Would they
love him up in Boston today?
If he said, love those who
would you laugh and call him crazy and just send him on his way?
If Jesus came to your town today,
Gospel Revolution.